All right, folks, this is another episode of the Tour de Todd Cycling Podcast. And man, do I have a good story for you today, a good interview today. I have Grant Kuntz on. I followed him for quite a while and I debated on whether I was going to ask him. And I said, screw it. Let's just go ahead and do it. See what happens. And today he is on. Grant, thank you for coming on the Tour de Todd Cycling Podcast.
Of course, I'm honored.
You got it, brother. You started racing a little bit later than most people would say they picked up racing a bike. You were in college.
Yeah.
Where did you find that interest? I'm curious.
Yeah. So I actually briefly started in high school. Towards the end of my high school career, I was basically running into brick walls in every other sport that I played. I grew up in South Texas and I played football and baseball and basketball and went to a high school with, I mean, there were 4,500 people in my high school. Like, it was a big, big school. So I was a late bloomer, just put it lightly. And I basically was still pretty small. Like, I didn't break 100 pounds till I was like almost 17.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I played quarterback on the football team. I played all the positions in baseball. Basketball was never really my cup of tea because I was so short, but I could kind of get away with it in the other sports. But yeah, I basically found cycling through my inability to compete at a high level in the other sports. And I think part of that was myself owning that responsibility, that burden of training that I, at that age, I didn't really know what it took to be a competitive athlete. Mm-hmm. I was naturally somewhat gifted and good enough to get by, but basically I decided to pick up Olympic sports because I've always been fascinated by the Olympics. So at the end of my high school, my time in high school, I started diving and then I started cycling. And so it's kind of a very varied mix of Olympic sports. But so I was a diver for 3 years in high school. And then I started cycling like about that same time and kind of just got better at cycling and fell in love with it a little bit more than diving. So that's kind of where I kind of took off with it. And then by the time I got to college, my sophomore or junior year of college, I won a national title. And that was kind of where I would say my career really took off. But
what? Okay. Wait a minute. Back. We've got to go through this one. Okay. So you started diving and then got in. When it came to cycling, did you take to it quickly or did it take you time? Or did you feel like you were a natural?
I wouldn't consider myself a natural. It's all very relative based on the community that I grew up in. So Houston has a really cool community. I love it. There's tons of good people. The riding anymore, like, I mean, this was probably 12 years ago that I was training in North Houston and the riding was actually pretty good because the community I've noticed in these, and the places where the riding isn't great, the community is that much stronger. So I really feel like the community brought me through. Most of my friends in high school, like I obviously had friends that I went to school with and teammates and stuff, but a lot of my friends were my parents' age because the guys who were riding bikes and doing the group rides and the guys who I was hanging out with all weekend were in their 50s. It's like, that's the crowd that I kind of grew up with. And so there were a couple of people in that crowd that were competitive racers and they kind of, I mean, if there's any kid at that point that's showing any interest in cycling, like they're going to try to convince you to race. Like that's basically how the community works. So I did have that competitive side of me and eventually I did take to the racing side, but I probably just rode my bike for a year and a half or so without racing. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you've ever listened to any of my episodes in this podcast, what I always ask somebody who has reached a high level of cycling is this question. And I think you touched a little bit on it. Me growing up in Minneapolis, there was one guy that when, as a kid, I learned the etiquette of riding, like how to ride in a pace line. You know, if it's 65 degrees, you put on or lower, put on leg warmers or how to ride. Did you have somebody teach you, as I would say, the nuances of riding a bike?
Yeah, I think in those early beginnings in Houston, I definitely had a couple, like there's a guy, John Wilmoth. We always called him John Scott because there are multiple Johns in our group, but he actually owns a wheel company now and is still really active in the community, but he lives like quite a bit north of me. But I would go up to Conroe to do this group ride on Thursdays. And actually his buddy, Corey Ray, who's now a close friend of mine, like they were both racers and really into it. And they kind of took me under their wing a bit on that racing side. And then as I progressed, I started racing and training more, basically all over the state of Texas. Like it's got its own little niche community. And so I had a guy, Richard Lamb, who ran a junior program that I raced for a little bit. He's a legend in the sport, honestly, from where I come from, at least. So Richard Lamb. And then once I started racing more for Austin-based teams, because that was kind of the hub of like where the real, what I considered the real racers lived, like, David Wanger and the whole Super Squadra team that I raced for. They had Phil Wyckoff, Steven Wheeler, Ian Dilley, like all those guys had, they were all super active in the community as U23 racers. And then that was obviously before I came onto the scene. And then by the time they progressed and were kind of entering more of their master's years, so to speak, like they all had kids at this point and families, and they kind of took me under their wing, especially as a young aspiring racer, and really taught me the lay of the land, and especially like the leg warmers thing. Cause there were a few times I would go to Austin and train, and it was like, it was in the 60s or something. And I would be, or maybe low or upper 50s. And I would be like about to leave the house with my buddy, David. And he would be like, nope, you're not leaving the house like that. You got to put more clothes on. So
I love it.
Definitely some of that going on. And and at the time, I took it a little harshly, actually, because I felt like they were really like micromanaging me. But in hindsight, it was a very necessary step to my development. And it's actually like, I'm eternally grateful now. So
not bad. I'm thinking, I don't know if they're in Austin, but Elbows Racing with Stefan, I'm going to blow his name, Stefan Roth.
Yep. I grew up kind of racing again. Once I started getting into the more elite scene, Michael Sheehan, Stefan Roth, they were kind of our biggest competition. Super Squadra was kind of this band of merry men who were trying to compete and bring guys up to compete at that elite level. And Elbows was already kind of there. So when I was just coming onto the scene, Elbows had even Heath Blackgrove and Logan Hutchings. And they had just a handful of international guys even who were very capable, like UCI level, international level racers who were just dominating the Texas scene. And so Christian House is a British guy who won British Nationals, and he would train in Austin and race those early spring races. So he kind of grew up aspiring to that elite level and looking at those guys as an example of like, even if you are a very accomplished bike racer, you can still race the local stuff, and like there's still benefit to that. And I think I've kind of held that with me all the way through to this, to today. So
not bad. Okay. I'm thinking Heath Blackgrove is from New Zealand, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And Christian House, if I'm correct on this one, is actually originally from Texas, but grew up in the UK.
Possible. Yeah. He definitely has a house in Austin.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he was actually from here. He has a British accent, so I assumed he was from the UK, but that might be from just growing up there. And maybe he is from Austin originally.
Yeah, I remember a long time ago reading an article about him. It's either he's from the UK and lived in Texas for quite a while, or he originally was from Texas and grew up in the UK. So it's one of those two, but I do remember.
Yeah, either could be true.
He was always
a legend and kind of it's kind of funny. He was one of those guys who I always looked up to as far as like style on the bike went. I feel he just had a lot of panache, and he always looked the part and just looked very, very professional. And that was, I barely know the guy, but he's made that impact on me to this day. So there's a million people like that who have played this small hand or big hand in my career, who may or may not even know that they play a part of my career. And that's, he's definitely one of them. So
not bad. Okay. Tell me this, being from the Houston area, did you ever race at Elkick?
I went one time with Richard Lamb, and that was, honestly, I was already probably a cat 3, maybe a cat 2 on the road. And so at the time I kind of thought I was hot shit, and I went and all these like 15-year-old Northwest Cycling Club kids like just kicked my ass. And I had a lot of fun, but I didn't think I was any good at it. And I obviously didn't have any clue about gearing and or cadence. And I didn't do any sort of track specific work. I just went out there to have fun and I got my ass kicked so bad that I just never went back.
Okay, that's pretty funny. I'm sorry. You said in I think it was in college, your sophomore year, you won a national championship. Was that in the team pursuit?
No, that was actually on the road. So on it was road? My junior year. Yeah, junior year of college in the individual time trial. I won. Yeah. So I had actually gone to nationals. I started competing at the national level in college. So that's kind of where I took off from that. But yeah, that initial national title was in the individual time trial in North Carolina.
Yep.
And that was kind of a light bulb moment for me where I was like, maybe I am good enough to like try to be a professional. Like that was the turning point for me. Is like, if I can do this, like while being a student and while doing, I mean, everyone at collegiate nationals is of course a student, but
yeah,
it at least gave me a hint of like, I want to try to get onto the under 23 national team. I want to try to like get my foot in the door with the national team and try to compete in Europe. And like, of course it snowballs pretty quick of how big you can dream, but it definitely all started with that collegiate national title. So
not bad. Okay. You focused a lot on road and gravel mm-hmm. before you ever got into racing full on track. And what do you prefer, if I may ask you, is it the road, gravel, or track? And then I'm going to ask you a question after that.
Yeah. So I definitely have a soft spot in my heart for the road. I pretty much in college, I made it like a quest of mine to try to go to the nationals in every discipline. And it's kind of funny. I went in cyclocross. I went in mountain bike. I went in road. And I never went in track. I never raced collegiate track at all. But so I tried to dip my toe in these other disciplines. I saw basically how much crossover there was in a lot of these top level athletes. And I was like, I can learn things. I can use these other disciplines to develop as an athlete and to develop as a cyclist. And so I was mostly training for the road that whole time and just like dipping my toe into these other disciplines and going to the odd mountain bike race. And I wasn't ever training specifically for it.
Yeah.
In fact, we didn't really have any trails in College Station. There were some up at Lake Bryan, but I basically would just go race. That was my form of mountain bike training. But anyways, that's a little off topic, but I was basically more or less solely on the road for 10 years. And I reached the professional level. I raced for a pro team out of Oklahoma City, of the Arapahoe Resources team. And then that eventually kind of merged with the Hincapie program. So I raced for Hollowesco Citadel for a year, mm-hmm. which was, again, just super, super important for my development and having athletes and teammates internationally coming over from Europe and like being on a team with guys from all over the world. Like your horizons expand pretty quickly. And so I definitely love the road. I had a lot of health problems actually with, I had this breathing condition, exercise induced laryngeal spasms or obstruction.
Wow.
So my vocal cords like kind of close my airway and it still happens occasionally. I got an official diagnosis in 2018, that year that I was on Hincapie. And that year it was kind of to the point where the longer races I couldn't really compete in because my throat kept closing and I got frustrated, obviously physically and mentally. Like,
yeah.
I just felt like there was like a block. And so about that time I was trying to overcome it. I kind of made this plan to go to Europe in 2019 after I lost my pro contract. I was going to go to Europe, try to move to Belgium, race Kermesses, like play that whole game and try to get a contract in Europe and like try to keep the dream alive. I still kind of had no strings attached in the States apart from my dog. And obviously he's awesome, but there's bigger fish to fry in a way. So yeah. I was going to probably leave him with my parents and try to move to Europe and do that whole thing. But, as that was taking place, I was racing as many stage races as I could in 2019, in the spring of 19. And then I came to a track camp. Actually, I had tried to come to a track camp while I was on Hincapie. I thought that could be a foot in the door. I've always kind of been told that I would be good at the track and I never really gave it a chance. And so I got invited to this like talent ID camp from the track, and they basically said, like, we think you have a lot of potential. I can't like obviously guarantee you an Olympic spot or anything, but we think you can be pretty good at this. And I had been trying to get on the national team for so long on the road that the track showing any interest at all in me was like, yeah, that's it. I'm in. Like, the Olympics are potentially on the horizon. And I know a lot of people get kind of sucked into that. But even just saying there's a chance that I could go to the Olympics and a chance that I could develop as a track cyclist. And at the time, I didn't really know a whole lot about track. They just told me that they could help me.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. So I kind of committed fully to the track then, using the road from then on as a supplement to my training. And so I hired my coach at the time, Mike Norton, and he basically guided me through. They kind of shut the program down, the track program down, in COVID times. So that's kind of what brought me into gravel, because that was the only thing really happening. So gravel was kind of in between my track career.
Yeah.
But I would say my heart, at this point, my heart lies on the track for sure. I have this kind of outside dream of coming back to the road, but I still have that, I guess, insecurity with my breathing condition that I don't know if I could be competitive or if I would just be a liability. So
yeah.
But the track events are short enough to where my breathing stuff doesn't usually bother me. So that's kind of what's allowed me to, I guess, and it's a blessing in disguise in a way, because it's kind of given me a bit of closure for the road and allowed me to focus most or all of my efforts on the track. So
yeah. Okay. Let's go back a little bit, because when I think of you, I'm thinking you can ride the hell out of a scratch race, points race. You're very good at the Omnium. It showed 2022, you won national championship for those three events.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a hell of a team pursuer. But mm-hmm. When you joined the team pursuit, I think you were with Shane Klein, Ashton Lambie.
Mm-hmm.
You got thrown in with those guys. Had you done a team pursuit before? And what was it like joining a team that was already there? Were you able, I guess the question is, to go into that seamlessly, or was it a bit of, okay, let me sit back and watch these guys?
It was a bit of both. It actually was my first, I would say, proper team pursuit race. I had done a bunch of those camps, like when the national team kind of gave me that open door, they basically said they couldn't give me any resources. They couldn't like help me that much, but I lived in my truck at the time. So I just drove it to Colorado Springs. And the national team let me basically crash their camps. So I would come and train with Ashton and Shane and Colby and Gavin and like all those, like Holloway, the whole national team back then. I would go to those camps and it was trial by fire. I basically had no other like outlet. I would just, anytime that they would open the door for me with the national team, I would be there. So that was kind of where that started. And then the nationals was kind of my first big team pursuit, I would say. So the national team coach tried to split up the national team, and Texas Roadhouse had their little team. And we were kind of the hodgepodge mix of like the coach, Clay Worthington at the time, he thought that I had potential to be at that level. I would not say that I was at that level at that point. Ashton was kind of the mastermind behind the strategy and decided to just burn Shane up in the first K. And then it was my job to just hold on for dear life. And I messed up the start. I was super sloppy in the line, like relative to where I can, like what I can do now. I was not ready to be thrown into that, but it was again, just a huge steep learning curve and a huge learning experience that I think Clay believed in my physical abilities enough to hold on and to potentially win with Ashton and Colby. Obviously he did a lot too. And so I think it was like, in a way, Clay was trying to test me and see if I could be thrown off the deep end and swim.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I guess I swam, but I didn't do a whole lot of work in line. It was mostly holding on for dear life. Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious. You win a national championship with them, mm-hmm. and you're sitting there after that ride and you're saying that you didn't do a lot of work. Is this, would you say it was more mental or was it more physical or a mixture of both?
It was definitely both. It was definitely both. I definitely knew I was in over my head a bit. Like these guys had been training, they'd been racing the World Cups, they'd been going to the World Championships, they were trying to qualify for the Olympics.
That's right.
And I was just this new kid who had maybe a hint of talent, but technically I wasn't good enough. Mentally, like, I wasn't good enough. And it made it super bittersweet, actually. Like, I was obviously super proud to win. And again, like, that's part of what motivated me moving forward. Like, if I can win a national title on the track without really training for it, like, how good could I be if I do focus on it? So it was again, that kind of planting the seed of, like, if I can do this with all these screw ups, like, what can I do if I actually, like, fine tune this? And yeah. So it was, again, motivating. It was a bit demoralizing because I felt like I didn't feel like an equal part of the team. And that's all on me. That was all mental. Like, they didn't make me feel like that. That was just on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was super special, obviously, to race with Ashton and Colby and Shane. Like, they're all really good friends of mine now. And just kind of planted the seed of, like, I'm not good, but I could be again. Yeah. So
not bad. Talk to me about this. When I think of Ashton, I'm thinking lots of weight, big gear. So my thought is, how, when it comes to the training for the team pursuit with that team, was it very difficult? Did your body react to the training quickly, or did it take a time to build up? And what kind of gear were you using for that national championship?
So there was, my body definitely was more of like a road cyclist build at that time. I was, my legs were a lot smaller. My max power was lower. I had a high threshold, but that was about it. And so since then, my physiology has transformed a lot. Like, I've gotten a lot more to the short end stuff, a lot more VO2 stuff. But back then I was definitely like a P4, like, back of the line, couldn't start very well. So they would put me at the back and just try to shelter me.
Yeah.
And so I think we ran, LA is a fairly slow track relatively, but I think we ran like maybe a 112 inch gear, maybe a 110 even. It's fairly, fairly small relative to what we ride now.
Yeah.
Like at the Worlds a month ago, we were on a 117, and I think the Danes won it on like a 124 maybe. Like,
wow.
Massive gear. So it's a completely different game, but LA was slow and I was technically bad, and you can usually get away with that better on a smaller gear. It also suited my physiology at the time more. Like, Ashton obviously had been doing all this big gear work and lifting a ton, and I was just dipping my toe in that world, but I wasn't definitely not on his level, and I'm still working on it. So
okay, that's great. I'm glad you said that, because my next question is this: would you consider yourself a big gear masher or a spinner?
I'm not a spinner. I don't have a whole lot of fast twitch. So again, that's something that Mike and I have worked hard to like mitigate. Just because you're not genetically adapted to it or fine-tuned in that department, like, you can still work on it and limit your losses in a sense. So I've definitely gotten in the gym a lot more. I've tried to build some muscle mass, build the max power up. I do think I guess relative to someone like Yuri, like, I'm definitely a masher. Like, I think that's mostly from not coming from a track background.
Yeah.
And not coming from having much fast twitch ever in my life. So I've identified that in myself, and I'm trying to turn myself into more of a power athlete. And that's definitely been a transformation, even from road cycling. Like, it's, yeah, the physiology is quite a bit different. So
Working on it. That's all you can do. You just mentioned a second ago, Glasgow. How did you feel?
Mm-hmm. It was a rocky road. I would say this whole season's kind of felt like a rocky road. And I feel like the Glasgow Worlds, super special experience. Like, I'll obviously cherish that forever. Just being there, being at the first Super Worlds, like, racing in the team pursuit, still trying to keep the team pursuit alive from the Olympic qualification standpoint, which we failed to do. So that was, I think we have good guys in the mix who are capable of qualifying in the future. And I've definitely held held on to hope that we could have qualified for the Olympics, that is. And the kind of the door is now shut on that. So I, in a way, there's some closure there, and I can kind of shift my focus back to the individual events and the Madison. But also, it's also obviously a huge bummer. Like we've really been focusing a lot of time and energy and attention on the team pursuit. And I've grown really close to the guys, and we've spent months and months and months together training and doing training camps and lifting together. And like, it's been a really special experience to have all that. And it, in a sense, it feels like our progress has been rapid, but not rapid enough. And I think we always kind of knew that we were fighting an uphill battle. We were starting from scratch 2 years before Olympic qualifying started. And I was the veteran of the team, so to speak. And that alone kind of speaks to like how green the whole team is. And eventually we did bring Colby Lang and Gavin Hoover back in, who are more veteran than I am, at least on the bike. And so there's been a mix and match, but I think Worlds in the end, I feel like it was more bitter than sweet, I would say.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I do think it was obviously we made progress. We're riding better. We're closing that gap to where we need to be to qualify for the Olympics in LA and to qualify even for the first round of like a team pursuit at the World Cup level or the Worlds level. So we're making progress. It's just not as fast as we had hoped. And I think that was a bit frustrating as well. But I also got to race the scratch race, which was kind of my shot at qualifying for the Champions League again, because you have to qualify every year using the Worlds. And I got a little antsy. I don't want to say I didn't take it seriously enough, but I definitely wasn't patient enough, and I didn't plan out my strategy well enough and hold myself to it. I did a big attack in the middle of the race, and that was not the right move. And I put my cards on the table. I raced hard. I definitely didn't want it to come to a field sprint. That wouldn't favor me. I wanted to split it. It didn't split. So I think I could have tweaked my strategy and made it a little more in my favor had I done some things a little differently. So that race also was, I would say, more bitter than sweet. It was obviously super fun. Obviously, just an honor to race in the Stars and Stripes at that level and at the World Championships. Like, can't look too far past that, but I am a competitive athlete, and as far as results go, I'm not too stoked on how Glasgow played out. So it is what it is. It's been kind of the theme for the year, and it's all been a huge learning experience and motivator for what's to come. So
tell me this, and I'm curious if you can describe it, I guess is the question. When I see you racing Worlds, okay, I'm thinking you have the talent to be there. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between, and this may sound like a silly question, but what is the difference? Why is there a gap between you and the winner? What do you think makes that gap, and what do you have to do to close it?
Yeah, I think I've kind of been trying to identify that all year. I raced the Omnium in Cairo as well, and I felt like I was hanging on. That was not, again, a more bitter than sweet experience. But I think the gap, in my opinion, it's that I didn't get a chance to race enough this year. I think last year I raced in T-Town all summer.
Yeah.
I like had all these, I was racing almost every week or every other week for months on end. And so I went from T-Town to Milton to back to T-Town to Cali, Colombia, then to Pan Ams, then to Worlds. And we were doing training camps all in between those. Like, I was on the track all the time, and I've been on the track all the time, but it's all been team pursuit focused, or at least I would say 90% of it. So I think for myself to get the speed in the legs, to get the confidence growing, to get the strategies that do and don't work solidified in my head, I think I just need more reps. I need more Omnium starts, more bunch race starts. And obviously Pan Ams this year overlapped with all the T-Town races, all the UCI stuff. So basically I raced the Nations Cup. I raced the Pan Am Championships. and I raced the Worlds. And those are my three races that I've done this year. So it's been a lot less racing than I had last year. And I think that racing helps me build momentum, both physically, mentally, confidence, like the whole shebang. So I think moving forward, especially with the a slight step back, I would say, from the team pursuit and more focus on the bunch racing between now and, I guess, the Olympics. I honestly don't know how possible that would be for me to still go for the Omnium or the Madison, but I do think I'm in the top three in the country right now, and anything can happen. So I'm gonna keep fighting, try to get more reps on the track this winter, try to go to Switzerland, try to do more Madisons, do more Omniums, and try to get that momentum building again so that I can be back to competing at a high level, and not just competing, but potentially winning at a high level coming into the next spring. So,
okay. Yeah. You touched on something that leads me to my next question. As a kid, I was always in love with 6-day racing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was the knucklehead kid that would cut out the pictures in magazines and put them in binders so that I could have the pictures of the guys that were racing.
Yeah.
So my question to you, totally. So here's my question to you. Have you considered doing any of the 6 days? How difficult is that to get into the program there? And go from there. I mean, that would be, if you're racing against some of those guys, that'll give you another, hopefully it would take you to another level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the momentum that I really thrive on, is that consistent racing, like day after day. Like I used to do stage races, and it's not too dissimilar. So I definitely have considered it. I didn't get into the Champions League this year, and so that kind of, again, could be a blessing in disguise for me getting into the 6 days and me at least being able to focus more on the Madison and the Omnium, whereas the Champions League is, at least the televised part, is a really short scratch race and an elimination. So that helps my Omnium chances, and that consistent racing at a super high level, I think, was invaluable for me last year. Yeah. And I would love to be there again this year, if I'm honest. But I also think that I'm trying to find the bright side, and I think it could open the door for me to get into some of the 6 days in the spring. I've talked to Pete Taylor at Star Track about working into Berlin. That's in February. Yep. But we're also trying to, I guess, take it a step at a time, and we'll start out going to, there's a 4-day in Geneva that I might try to go do. Yep. And then there's another Madison, and not like a bunch of UCI stuff in Grenchen in Switzerland just a few weeks later. So I think we'll start at the high level UCI stuff. Especially with the Madison, I need to work on the Madison on a shorter track. I've only really raced the Madison on a 333. I've done all my Madison training on a 333. So I think the fast paced nature of shorter tracks it's definitely going to, again, be a learning curve. And I'm just trying to keep the development going. And if I get good enough, I think physically I have the talent and I have the skill set to do it. It's more of the technique and the confidence. So we'll see what I can do in the UCI stuff this winter. And if that develops into getting into 6 days in the spring, then that would be obviously a dream come true and a good step in the right direction towards potentially getting a Madison spot for the Olympics. But yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to ask in 6 months, but we'll see.
No, it's not. It's not. You can do it. You can do it. I believe you can. How did you get involved with the Champions League? Was it an email of, hey, Grant, we'd like you to come do the Champions League? Or were you at a race and somebody tapped you on the shoulder, said, let me talk to you?
Well, it's kind of funny because in 2021, that was kind of my first full season back on the track following COVID. And I remember watching the Champions League I would tune in live like every week and eventually watched Gavin, my teammate, come out on top. And it was just super inspiring and really, really cool to watch. Just looked like a total spectacle of track cycling. And I loved it. And so I kind of, there on my couch in the winter of 2021, I was like, I want to be there next year. And at the time, I didn't probably fully grasp what it would take to get to that level. Yeah. At that point, I had just gotten second at the Nationals and I had never raced in Europe. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. That's my goal, to be at the Champions League. And honestly, it was just a total I reached out in that spring to the Champions League organizers, and they were like, oh yeah, just fill out this form and apply, like put your name in the hat basically. And as the as time went on, like they announced that the Worlds would be the selection race, I guess, for the Champions League. So it's an automatic invite if you podium at Worlds. And then there's some wildcard spots for people who turn it down, or there's obviously a few extra from that. So if you, anyways, there was a, I had been fighting and fighting and fighting, and I really had honestly given up hope leading into the Worlds last year. I didn't actually get a bunch race start initially. So I had raced the team pursuit and I thought I was done at Worlds. And I was like, oh, well, if I don't get a bunch race start, then I'm not, I can't even put my name in the hat for Champions League really. But there was a logistical thing with the national team and with some of the athletes where I got thrown into that points race like 3 days before. And I hadn't been on a bunch bike in like 6 weeks. I had only done team pursuit training. And so I jumped into the points race. I think it was again, a blessing in disguise. I didn't have any expectations. I hadn't done any training for it. I was like, I'm here at the Worlds, like racing the points race against the best guys in the world, racing against Yuri Havik. Like it was a dream come true just to be on the start line. And I was instructed by my coach, the national team coach, Rob Stanley, to be patient in that first half. And so I was a lot more patient than I normally would be. And I realized about halfway through that I was feeling pretty good. Maybe a little before halfway through, I was feeling quite good. And I had kept my powder dry and I ended up taking a couple laps. And I guess the Champions League organizer went and found Pete Taylor, the Star Trek manager, mid-race, and like told Pete, like, he's in. So like, as I'm like mid taking a lap. So they came up to me in the infield like 5 minutes after, and they're like, hey, we want you to be in the Champions League.
Wow.
And that was like just a total, yeah, a total dream come true. And then obviously the 5 weeks that I spent on the road, like in Mallorca and Berlin and Paris, like it was the coolest thing I've ever done in cycling. And it was super, super special. So.
Okay. Can you, for folks that may not know how it's organized when you're doing a Champions League, can you talk to me about how a day is for the Champions League for racing?
Yeah. So coming from North America, like we have kind of a slightly different schedule than the people who are going home every week and then coming to the race on the weekend.
Yep.
Like to them, it's almost just like doing a UCI circuit of like races every weekend. But for us, we're on the road the whole time. So I went to Mallorca like 10 days before the first race, did a bunch of training in Mallorca, tried to get some speed back in the legs, tried to be a tourist a little bit. Like I've never been to Mallorca and it's cycling mecca of the world. So, so I basically like momentum was building. You basically ride a little bit throughout the week, do like one endurance ride, one easy ride, some openers, a rest day, like kind of just bouncing in between. At least that's what I was doing. The Canadians were training a lot more, but they had more races coming up in the late winter. So, when it came to race day, you were basically, we had a points race qualifier that was before the whole thing. So everyone's going to make the final event, but the points race was counted as a UCI C2 points race. So you got UCI points. It was a kind of a weird mix of like competitiveness because some guys wanted to keep their powder dry for the scratch race and the elimination. So some guys wouldn't hardly race it at all. So they made it to where that points race and the result from that points race was your start spot for the scratch race and for the elimination. So they gave it a little more weight and then people started taking it more seriously. For me, I'm just stoked to be there. I'm stoked to like be racing at that level and having an opportunity to get another points race in every week. It was brutal. It was super hard, obviously, but it was again, just getting those reps in on the track.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to like the big show, they turn off all the lights, the projectors come on, the lights are going, it's all blue light in the infield. It's super dark. It's like all for television and the spectators are, most of the stadiums were sold out and
wow,
it was just like a real, real spectacle. And yeah, it's the scratch race is only 5K. So it's a 20 lap scratch race and
it's super,
super short. And then there's an elimination. So I played around with the strategies a bit. In that first scratch race in Mallorca, I put on like, I think 115 inch gear, maybe 116. And I was like, this is basically like, it's 5K scratch. It's basically a team pursuit. So all I need to do is get this gear up to speed and I can launch one big attack and we'll see what happens. And that's what I did. And I ended up fifth. And so I was like, well, that, that I guess that worked. Like the field did split. Like I was saying earlier, like I wanted it to split at Worlds and it didn't. But that first night at the Champions League in Mallorca, like it did split and I ended up on the front end of it. And so once I lost, or once I started to get tired and did start to like, I guess, lose the momentum of running that huge gear, like I was just holding on for dear life for the finish. So I was in a lead group of five and I got fifth, but it's all right. Still better than I would have done otherwise. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's my strategy. But yeah. And then after that, there's an elimination. The schedule would flip flop with the women every night. So sometimes we would race first, sometimes they would race first, but yeah, it's just a super action packed and super fun to just even watch everyone else, the sprinters, the Kierans, the match sprints, the women, like it's all super inspiring and it's just trying to soak it all in the whole time.
Not bad. Last couple of questions. There's one I got to touch on because I've interviewed, how did you get involved with Star Trek? And what does that mean to you? Because that is to me, that is a wonderful organization.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's kind of fallen into my lap, honestly, thanks to the generosity of Pete Taylor. That first summer I raced in T-Town in 2019, like I didn't have a lot going for me at the time. And I basically raced the first few weeks staying with a buddy, and then that host house, or he left. And so I was staying longer and I didn't have anywhere to go. And so everyone I talked to was like, oh, call Pete. And I was like, who's Pete? So I called Pete and I ended up staying in his basement for about a week and kind of started the relationship then, I guess, with Pete directly. But there was also that first talent ID camp that I ever went to with USA Cycling. Dave Harrison, who's another Star Trek coach, was like shadowing the national team coach for that and like trying to see how things were run at the top levels. And so my first introduction to racing at a high level like that, Dave Harrison was there, and he is like, he's obviously one of the staples of the Star Trek program. And that, that kind of helped open the door for me to even reach out to Pete that next summer. And then, or I guess it was that summer actually. So that was spring of 2019. And then I ended up staying with Pete like just a few months later. And then following COVID, It was always like, this is a youth program. Like we're trying to stay focused on the youth. And then I think eventually people started getting good enough within the program that Pete wanted, I guess, an elite program to show the kids what they could aspire to be and how far they could take the sport and what the Star Trek program could do for you, like even beyond the after school program that it mostly is. And so I ended up racing nationals in 2021. Staying with Pete, kind of signing on officially with the team. Wow. Leading into that. And then I got second in the Omnium, kind of shockingly, because I hadn't been on a track in a year and a half. And it kind of, it snowballed from there. I mean, the next year, Pete decided he wanted to take it to the UCI level. And luckily, we kind of got the jump on the UCI, where we got UCI status and got to compete at Nations Cups. Basically, but just by having a UCI license. And so that ended up, again, snowballing into me going and racing in Milton at my first Nations Cup. I got my butt kicked. I didn't even qualify for the Omnium. I did the IP, nothing super impressive. And then it was, again, eye-opening to like, this is what it takes. Like I tried to take all those defeats as motivation. And then I went to T-Town, kind of honed my skills, honed my strategy, got that confidence. Went to Cali, Colombia for the next Nations Cup and got sixth in the Omnium. And so that's kind of been what's helped propel me and prove to myself and prove to the team and Pete and show the kids again what you can do if you just put your head down and put the work in. So it's all been super motivating for me to go even help with the kids in T-Town over the summer. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it out, but last summer I got to go out there and help kind of mentor and build some relationships with some of the kids. And some of them are so into it, and it's just super, it's inspiring to me to see how much they care. And they're probably doing what you were doing with the 6 days and cutting out magazines and cutting out cards, and like they're getting signatures, and like they're just fans of the sport and they love it, and they're talented and they're young, and it's just, yeah, it's the coolest organization, and I'm really, really proud to be a part of it. So
not bad. I have a question for you, and I think I know this answer, but I gotta ask it. What would you take first? What would you take? Olympic gold medal or Olympic medal, world championship jersey?
That's a tough one. I know there's a lot of people in cycling who would take the world's jersey over the Olympic medal, but the Olympics are what essentially opened my eyes to this sport in the first place. Like if this wasn't in the Olympics, I wouldn't be here, if I'm honest. And for better or worse, I mean, I'm still obviously super grateful to be at this level. And I've honestly made it a goal at this point in my career, like after getting sixth at Worlds last year in the points race and sixth in the Omnium at the Nations Cup. And those have kind of made it to where I think I might be able to win a world title. And I don't know if that's true, obviously. I'm going to keep putting my head down, keep putting in the work, keep showing up, trying to find the silver linings and the defeats and learning lessons day in and day out. And so I've kind of made the world championship jersey a goal of mine. Whereas the Olympics, if I'm able to go to an Olympics, if I'm able to be a part of a USA Olympic team, obviously I would want to be competitive. And at this point, it's easy to dream of qualifying. Once you qualify, it's a dream to get a medal, of course. To me, I feel like the Olympic standard is even higher than the world standard. And there's a bit of debate about the Olympics being more or less competitive. I know all the big countries bring out all this technology and bring their A game, and they focus years and years of attention on it. But there's also, in most of the events, there's only one person per country. And so there's kind of sometimes a softer field at the Olympics, or at least it's the good guys are better, and the lower end is worse than even like a Nations Cup potentially. Yeah. So it's harder to win, but again, even being there and being competing at that level, that's the goal of mine for the Olympics is to compete. And again, you asked me if I stick through this and stick through the LA block and I qualify any event for LA, like I'm sure my answer is going to be different and I'm going to be going for a medal. But at this point, it's still a bit ethereal to aspire to be on an Olympic team. And I would take just going to the Olympics as a high mast of the sport. Whereas I think winning a world title, especially in this individual event, like a scratcher or a points race or something, I think that's almost more attainable. And it feels like that is more in my control. And maybe that's why it feels like that, because there's less politics, I guess, and less roadblocks to just getting there. Like this year, I got thrown into that scratch race, not thrown in. I feel like I did deserve a spot. But it's kind of a crapshoot in some of those individual events at the Worlds, and not to take anything away from whoever's winning them. But I think that's where I could really, I guess, surprise some people and win a world title. But the Olympics is definitely what brought me into the sport. And I think that's probably the high mast of what I'm aspiring to be.
Not bad. Last question here. I'm curious. You're 29 this year. Have you thought about how much time you have? Because it goes quickly. You do have to be encouraged, because if you're looking at a Yuri Havik, 33 years old, 34 years old, still winning and still racing at a high level. So I guess my question to you is, how long do you have left in this sport, and what would you do after?
Yeah, I honestly think about that weekly at this point. For the longest time, even getting my foot in the door with the national team, like they kind of perceived me as too old to begin with. And I made it my mission to prove them wrong. And so I hope that I've done that, but I also see myself still as fairly new to the sport. Like I've done a lot of things. I've been in Nations Cups, Worlds, Champions League. I've checked a lot of the boxes in just a couple short years of focusing on it. So I'm still very encouraged that I'm getting better daily. I'm getting better every training block, every year, every season, every race I go to. I feel like I'm learning things and growing still. And I still think I'm far from being the best athlete I can be. And so it's also tricky because I am getting married next week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I have a lot more on my plate than I have in the past. I'm not living in my truck with no strings attached anymore. I'm not at a point in my life where I can just drop everything and go to a race. Or, I mean, at this point, the income side of it is really what's holding me back in a way. Not holding me back, but might potentially be a limiting factor of how long my career can go. So I hardly, depending on how you look at it, I hardly make enough to get by. So I still think I'm getting better, but there's obviously more life factors at hand. I would love to try to go for the LA Olympics. I want to keep the dream alive. I still want to see how good I can get, and I don't think I'm there yet. And when I look at guys like Yuri, he is in his mid-30s. He's older than me. He's super talented.
Yep.
He's still winning at a super high level. He just won a Madison World title. Like,
that's right.
Honestly, a huge inspiration to me. And I've gotten to race against him, and it's super special that he's able to do what he is. And I also look at his progression, and he's been racing on the track since he was 15, or maybe even earlier than that. And I didn't really start taking track seriously until I was 27. So I think I have a long way to go. I think I have a lot more that I can improve. But at this point, I'm honestly taking it a few months at a time. If my career ends up being a burden on my family, then I'm not going to keep going and put that in jeopardy. So I got to keep my priorities in check, but I also got to fight to keep the dream alive. So there's obviously give and take there. And my soon-to-be wife is super supportive, and she wants me to keep going and try for the LA Olympics. But again, if I see myself and see my career becoming more of a burden than it already is to my family, then it'll be hard to justify keeping on. But time will tell. A few months at a time, try to keep the momentum going. It's easy. Like when I have a slump of a season, like I didn't win anything until I won the Madison Cup about 2 weeks ago. So
yeah.
When I finish a whole season and I haven't had any major results that I'm like really proud of, it's a lot easier to be like, maybe I'll throw in the towel. Like, but I've also reached that point 20 times in my career, like where I've been on the fence of like, maybe I'm done. Maybe this is it. Maybe. But then you win one race, no matter how small it is. And I won the Madison Cup 2 weeks ago. And now all of a sudden I'm like, that maybe turns into, maybe I can still win that world title. Maybe I can still make the Olympics. Maybe I can keep this dream alive and make some money enough to not financially burden my family. Like I'm reinvigorated by that in a hopeful way. And I think if I can keep getting those little tastes of victories and tastes of success in the sport,
yeah,
I'll keep fighting to keep it alive as long as I can.
I like that. All right, we're going to end it there. Grant Kuntz, I want to say thank you for being a gentleman and coming on the Tour de Todd Cycling Podcast. I wish you all the luck, and I will be following you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure. And yeah, I really love this sport, and I love what you're doing to help promote it. So thank you.